Welcome to the Donna Sebo Show. Donna is an international mental practitioner, award-winning author, counselor, speaker, teacher, and radio TV personality. Dedicated to empowering others through her mental skills, she also features authors and experts from all over the world to share their knowledge and experience with you, the listening audience. Now, let's join Donna and her guests. Here's Donna.
Hello and welcome. Welcome to an hour of mind power. This is Donna Sebo. And the show today, we're going to be, taking a different positioning from what typically would have been, maybe imagined from a woman's perspective. And what am I talking about? Kidnapping of children. We've often heard stories related by women about how their children have been taken from them, various circumstances. But today we're going to be talking with a father. That's right. We're going to be hearing a story from a man's perspective. The title of the book is Kidjacked, A Father's Story. Scott Lesnick is my guest today, and we're going to be finding out about his unique, really unique story from a man's perspective. Hi, Scott.
Donna, how are you? It's wonderful to speak to you again.
Well, you know, Scott, I really feel, and I was saying this to you before we went on air, that you have set a precedent with this book, because so many times we will hear stories about children being kidnapped by a parent and or grandparents. Their circumstances, each and every one, is quite unique. But usually it's from a woman's perspective. Your
yes.
story is from a man's perspective. You, as an individual, you're an average guy. You
absolutely.
You write for a living. You enjoy stuff like anybody else does. You enjoy being outdoors. You enjoy yoga. You enjoy all kinds of things. In a million years, I bet you never thought this was going to happen to you. Why was it important for you to write this book? So many people would just say, "Well, it's not necessary. I'll just move on with my life."
You know, that's a great question, and I've always believed, as have you, in the power of positive thinking and self-image. And once this happened to me, my self-image and my ability to think in a positive manner were at risk. And I had to figure out who I was and what I was all about. Was I going to be a father without his children half a world away? Or was I going to fight and try to figure out, even though there were no international laws at the time requiring my children to be returned, some way to possibly reunite with them? And I just never gave up. I just kept on trying and working with people and working with myself and kept moving forward.
Now, let's do a little background on this. How did you meet your wife? You met your wife in an overseas environment, did you not?
Yes, I did. I met her in Israel when I was traveling through Europe as a young man in my 20s. And we met and happened to start a relationship, and about a year and a half later, we were married, and she very much wanted to move to this country, and I sensed that everything was just fine, and at first it was, and until a couple of kids were born, and truth was turning into non-truths, and I realized that I might have some issues with her being honest, but I never, and as you said, in a million years expected that overnight I would lose my 2 and 4-year-old and really become, you know, parentless. I didn't have my kids anymore, and there was no way she was going to bring them home. And this happened over a course of 4 years. From
now,
when we were married
back
to when she decided to take them.
Yeah, let's go back to 1991. Because here you are in a marriage. You think everything's hunky-dory.
Yes.
You're like the average American family. The kids, you know, are born, and you get to know your neighbors, and you have a nice environment that you're living in, and everything's wonderful. But her behavior started to change. And when her behavior started to change, then you couldn't quite figure it out. It's as if, well, gee whiz, this is just the way it is. But she started wanting to take the children back to Israel. Now, you had no idea what was going on while you were at work. You had no idea the interactions that she was having with other people. Tell us a little bit about that, that you learned about later, about her behavior and the concern of a number of people.
Donna, you're absolutely right. Again, what happened was people could sense that Lisa was up to something, and she was beginning to also tell folks that she wasn't as pleased with being in America as she had hoped. She was great with me, she loved me, but she had this desire to be back home. Problem was, my job was here, the kids were here, this is an economy that was thriving, and people could sense by talking to her, our friends and family, that she was very torn on where she wanted to be. And then she started saying, you know, I think I'm going to be going back to Israel. But she never mentioned, I'm going to go back to Israel. I'm going to take the kids and not return.
Mm-hmm.
And once she started saying this to people, I had more of an idea that she was not as happy. We would talk. We would, you know, I said, I want you as happy as possible. What can I do? She goes, no, I'm happy. I'm good here. But unfortunately, when she decided to take them for a summer vacation, one day I woke up and they were gone, and that was it. I called and said, what's going on? She said, we're staying in Israel, and you're going to have to move on with your life and marry someone else and have more kids. Pretty much her words verbatim.
Mm-hmm. She was actually, when I was reading your book, she reminded me of someone with a bipolar personality.
Yes.
Someone that one day, on Monday, she might have a certain attitude. On Thursday, she might have another attitude. And so you really had to come to a positioning of, and this you became aware of as time went by, but one of the first things that you really became aware of is that there were more women that would kidnap their children than you'd been aware of. You had the same assumption.
Absolutely.
I had.
I always thought it was men, and I was shocked to find out how many women did this too. And it wasn't, it was easier for me to understand if the children or women were in any danger. Absolutely. Right away, I could understand that. That wasn't the case at all at our house. It was quite the opposite. Things, as you said, were quite normal as far as everyday life, and we had a comfortable house and living and all that. But once I found out that women were doing this, it opened up a more light. And of course, time went on, and I got to find out more about my ex-wife Lisa's personality through some psychological testing and things. As you said, there was a lot going on there that I couldn't put my mind and finger on because I wasn't practiced enough or keen enough to figure it out. But as time went on, you bet, I had a full picture painted in two different countries by two psychologists of what was going on, and that was one of the ways I was able to figure out a way to get my children home.
Now, you were fortunate because at the time that you were working, your boss was very, very supportive. When he found out what had occurred, you had this tremendous support on the part of people. But now you really, because this was an international situation,
yes,
she had kidnapped the children. She had taken them to Israel. She was living with her family. And her attitude with you was, well, sorry, you're stuck. You're just going to have to put up with this. In a million years, she never thought you really were going to fight her on this.
Correct.
And
not only that, but she... I'm sorry, go ahead.
No, what I was going to say is that that was to your advantage because she didn't expect it. But you didn't have any clue about what it was going to take to be able to do this. And fortunately, you had the support of your employer and other people when they found out what had occurred, that they said, okay, you do whatever you have to do. Don't worry. We're going to be here. So you really broke new ground as far as international law went, didn't you?
The support of people was key. And when I do my presentations around the country, that's one of the things I talk about, is opening up and creating space to allow people to assist you on your journey. But without the help of people, without my management at work being supportive, I would not have been able to do this. And yes, the only thing I had going for me besides determination and a never give up attitude was time. Because there were no international laws at that moment, called the Hague Treaty for the Abduction of Minors, that was signed by Israel, my wife didn't know it, but she was under no obligation to ever return our children. I knew that.
Mm-hmm.
I found out, and my heart ached even more, but having that knowledge and knowing that she didn't know it did give me an advantage, the advantage of time and trying to figure out one possible way, because I knew I had one shot to bring my children back home to America.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. Now, again, in the course of time, you were getting feedback from people that had been around your children. One was a woman who said that, she said, I've got to tell you something, because your children, I've been taking care of them. Your wife is just dumping them off, and she's telling me not to feed your son. So her behavior was really quite erratic, and she was so concerned that finally she spoke up about it, and she said she's not taking care of the children. This is my observation. She tries to get other people to watch the kids because she doesn't want to be bothered with them. But your baby, he's just a little guy. He's only 3 years old. He's going to have to eat.
Yes.
And she's telling me don't feed him because he's going to get fat. So here's all of these little details that come back that are showing a lot of her instability. Not only that, but she has no compunction about lying. Now, you mentioned something just a moment ago that I think is very important, and that is at the time that this situation was evolving and was in the process of demanding that you make a choice about what you were going to do, you mentioned that the United States and Israel did not have an agreement to the extradition of minors. Now, today, there is a document called the Hague Treaty or the Hague Convention. Tell us about what this means, because it was in place for a few countries, wasn't it? But not all, not Israel.
It was, and since my case, Israel has very wisely decided to sign the Hague Treaty, but at the time, they hadn't. So what the Hague Treaty did and what it does today is, in case a child is abducted or kidnapped and taken to another country, if that country has signed the Hague Treaty, and of course the U.S. has, America has, then what it does is it takes that case, and what it does, Donna, is it puts it up right up to the top of the courts as far as expeditiously moving things forward instead of taking months and years. It gets top priority and it gets a lot more attention because children are involved. And generally what they try to do is figure out where the best place for the children is as far as safety. And if there's no safety issues, then they almost always choose the home country, meaning wherever the children were pretty much raised. Not necessarily born, if they were born somewhere and moved a month later, but where they lived the majority of their life, that's the country that they should, that has the number one authority over it. And when it happened, it wasn't signed. So I had to come up with another way.
Now, you had a wonderful attorney that you were able to come to know. His name is Cliff. And I'm going to quote from your book, because you said he was the calmest, most together person. And this is what he said to you. Well, kid, if you want your children back, I think you're going to have to go get them yourself. No government official is going to put their ass on the line for you. Sorry. They don't give a crap about you, and you have nothing they want. Wow. Is that blunt and to the point?
That was my light bulb moment, Donna. When this gentleman who had already practiced for 40 years and had a distinguished career and took me under his wings for absolutely no reason except he cared, said that to me after several meetings and lunch meetings in his big office at his large conference table, that's when I realized I had to come up with a plan. I had to do something, because every agency I had called, every government official I had spoken to all over the country and even in Israel said the same thing. Sorry. Mm-hmm. There's no Hague Treaty. She doesn't have to return the children. Some were sympathetic. They were just blunt, and that was it. But it was the meeting with Cliff that helped me realize I had to come up with some other plan or move on with my life, and moving on with my life just wasn't an option.
So you ended up making a decision that you were going to need to go to Israel and to do exactly what Cliff said. And there was a due process that was going to be involved. And when you went back to Israel, what you had to do was to convince her that you were going back to Israel because you were going to live there and you were going to work there. And you set this out so that things were going to work the way they were supposed to. You were determined that you were going to bring your two children home. And at that time, the economy in Israel was very, very bad.
Oh, yes.
And you had wisely kept in touch with your wife, and you found that the feedback you were getting from different people about her lies, what she was doing with the children, and that you never really could tell when she was telling the truth. You found this even after she'd gotten back to Israel, because she said she couldn't find a job, she couldn't do this, she couldn't do that, she couldn't do the other, she was bored, and it was quite an interesting situation. But you realized when you got there that she had some really serious psychological issues that even her family, they were not willing to acknowledge. Of course, they'd fallen in love with her grandkids, the grandparents had, and you can't fault them for that. But you really had quite a challenge in front of you.
I did, because it was a very big family also. She was one of seven children and the second oldest, so I gave myself 1 week to fly there and to fly back with her and the children, because I knew that I couldn't keep my cover, I couldn't keep my story, I couldn't continue to play the role that I was going to play for 1 week without their keen eyes looking at me and breaking me down. So I had hired a wonderful attorney named Julie, and I explained to her what I was going to do, and after many, many meetings, she just looked at me and she said, "You got to come up with a different plan. This is the Middle East, and this could go south real quick. I can't help you over there. You got to do something else." And I said, "Look, it's been 5 months since I've seen my children. I'm flying over there because I've gotten permission from Lisa to visit. Her steel wall is down. Her family is welcoming me, and I'm going to try to get the kids home." And that's what I did, and I went over there and was welcomed by her family and began to face-to-face state my case with Lisa and her father, who was really the alpha male of the family and the one who could have did things immediately. And as the days went on, Lisa's guard went down lower and lower, and she agreed with less pressure than I thought I'd have to apply to walk on an airplane with our children. The only way I could get them home with our kids in tow back on an LL Airlines DC-10 airline flight to Chicago O'Hare, 13 hours from Israel.
Mm-hmm. Now, let's talk about the legal system. You had attorneys in Israel. How did you manage to find these attorneys that were willing to represent you? Because as you said when we first started chatting about this, there were some protocols that had to be followed, and you were able to find the children's tickets because your wife actually had tickets for them. She had bought round-trip tickets. You were able to find their passports. You were able to have this in your possession. But there was a process that you had to go through. First of all, how did you manage to find an attorney in a foreign country that would be willing to take on your case?
It was a matter of two things. When I was able to successfully get the children back here to America, I served Lisa with divorce papers because I knew I couldn't trust her anymore. And unfortunately, I realized what no one wants to know, but our marriage was over. And we met in front of a judge and had a custody hearing. And I was awarded primary placement of Jonathan and Allie and had the honor of raising them. But a couple of years later, we were all back in America. I was raising the children, and Lisa was seeing them from time to time. Israel signed the Hague Treaty. When Israel signed the Hague Treaty, she went back in front of a judge and said, look, Israel signed the Hague Treaty. Let me take the kids to Israel for a while to visit my family. Nothing's going to happen. And my attorney in America and I, we protested because we knew, we had seen what she does. And the judge said, look, everything's in order. It'll be okay. It wasn't. She took them, she kept them, she enrolled them in school. So it actually ended up happening a second time, and that's when I had to contact Shmuel and David in Israel. And the way it began, it was with faxes and looking up as much as we possibly could, because this was still the 90s and the internet wasn't humming real good then. So we looked at attorneys. I spoke to them with an 8-hour time difference. And I went with my gut, and my gut told me that the gentleman I was talking to I could trust, and he was the one I met when I flew back a second time to rescue my children and got off the airplane. He was waiting there for me with a sandwich and a hug. He said, don't worry, we're going to take care of you.
Now, one of the things that was done.
Investigative work, mm-hmm. but a lot of luck and help or intervention from somewhere.
Now, one of the things that was done is psychological testing. And
correct.
When we first started chatting, you had mentioned a little bit about this. And mm-hmm. in your book, and this was something Lisa had not expected, and she had had more than one psychological test. And this was in front of the Israeli judge. This information was given. And it was defined. The psychologist said she had a narcissistic personality coupled with sociopathic tendencies, and this woman had deep-seated psychological issues. And she actually, your ex-wife did, literally lost it in the courtroom, demonstrating exactly what the psychologist had come up with. But this just wasn't one test. She had been tested more than once. And this is something that worked to your advantage because they gave you permission to leave Israel with the children.
Both psychologists in America and in Israel came up with the same conclusions of her and myself. I turned out to be pretty much normal, which is good. I'll take normal any time. And we were able to leave because of the psychological testing, the Hague Treaty, which had been signed, and the judge who sided for our side. There was an appeal. It went to the appellate court in Nazareth, and they turned it down. Next up would have been the Supreme Court, and they said, no, enough is enough. They've proven what they need. You will give the father the passports and the tickets, and he will be heading back home to America with the children, and he will not have to return them until they're 18 if they choose to.
Mm-hmm.
Needless to say, it was a bit of an emotional day, Donna.
Yes, that's very true. But one of the things that I found very heartwarming about your story, because the court said the children at the age of 18 would be able to make their choice about where they wanted to be, which is right. I mean, that's the way it should be. They're considered adults by both countries, and they have the right of choosing where they want to live or who they want to be with.
Correct.
Now, the children had been pummeled with so much information by her that
yes.
they were so concerned, because children naturally want to be with their mothers. But she
yes.
really had a challenge, and you were able to work with your children so that, one, they didn't hate her, but, two, that they would understand that you weren't the evil man that she often portrayed you to be, that you had not really abandoned them. And fortunately, they grew up, and your son even said to you at one time, "I'm so glad you were able to rescue us." Now, do your children still interact with their mother? Do they still, have they gone back to Israel to visit with their family?
They have gone back one time, but I was advised by a woman much wiser than me as I was going through this, and said the worst thing you can do is say anything negative about their mother or badmouth them. It will injure them, and it will come back to bite you. And I bought into that philosophy early, and that's something that I share with a lot of groups around the country. It's not the kids' battle, and it's not their issue, and it's our job to keep them out of it. And I did that, and I also was very fortunate several years later to meet and marry, after 4 years, a wonderful Meg. And Meg turned out to be a wonderful mother, stepmother, and female role model to both Jonathan and Alexandra. They do speak to their mother from time to time via Skype. They have been over one time each, and I was fine with it. I paid for it, and they, their mother did come here one time also, so they see her infrequently, and she has pretty much moved on with her life, which is not going real well.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm. And I'm sure that the grandparents have really regretted that this kind of a situation evolved. But in your book, you make a comment that one of the things as individuals we need to remember, that whatever obstacles we may have, we can work through them with hard work. Sometimes you have to sacrifice. And you mentioned the four-letter word luck. And I think that your story is such a powerful one. And kidjacked a father's story from a man's perspective of dealing with issues. I think too many times we want to make it male-female specific. But the reality is, when there is a dysfunctional parent, and I was reading an article about a mother that had abandoned her family, just this morning I was reading about it.
Wow.
This happens. And how the family really was traumatized by it, and all of a sudden here she comes back in. And there are those people, male or female, it really doesn't make any difference what side of the fence they're on, who
Correct.
Are psychologically disturbed and who may have a stinking personality. And those are the times when you do have to stand up and protect what you love and what is most important to you. And I just think that your journey in Kidjacked, as you have written it with such candor, is a phenomenal story.
Thank you.
It's a phenomenal story. What is your website, Scott, where people can find out more about what you've done?
Well, Donna's website is www.scottlesnick, that's LESNICK.com. You can find out all about me, and under the product section is the books available in e-form or in paperback.
Well, Scott, it took a lot of courage to come out with this, as I say about so many of the people that I chat with on the air, because to speak truthfully and with integrity about a personal experience that was very, very intense, and took a great portion of your life in dedication and involvement with your children. Congratulations on a job well done. And for those of you listening, I think it would be a real eye-opener as to what sometimes people have to go through to make sure that what they love, their children, are protected in the best way possible. Scott Lesnik, thank you so much for being my guest on the air today, and keep up your writing.
I will, Donna, and I'll be in touch. And thank you so much for your time. I appreciate it and look forward to speaking to you again.
Thank you, Scott. This is Donna Sebo. Don't forget Kid Jacked, A Father's Story. Scott Lesnik has been my guest. We're taking a break. We're going to be back in just a moment.
Do you have children between the ages of 3 to 10? Do you love children's books and collect them? Then you'll want to know about God's Kiss, the award-winning illustrated children's book that has been enjoyed by families around the world. 15 beautiful illustrations by Pacific Northwest artist Ed Gedrose accompany this lovely story about a little boy named Johnny that will capture your heart and mind in a very special way. Multicultural and non-denominational in content, it will become a family favorite that you and your children will want to read again and again. This book is available by itself through Amazon, or if you contact me, Donna Sebo, directly, you can get a personalized signed copy. There is also a talking book. You can order the talking book CD by contacting me via email, donna@delphiinternational.com, or by calling 253-582-5604. You can also visit my website, delphiinternational.com, to see more details. God's Kiss is a family classic that belongs in everyone's library. Get your copy now.
Hi, this is Donna. I'm here in Anchorage, Alaska, where we don't have snow, but we've got some rain. It feels like a Pacific Northwest day today here in Anchorage, Alaska. Spring definitely is here, and the people in Alaska love their flowers. They love the gardens, and they just do an incredible job at decorating up the city. Baskets of flowers just hang everywhere, and of course the cool rains just make it just stay so fresh and wonderful, and it's a beautiful, beautiful city to visit. And here, something very, very special is going on this weekend. The USS Anchorage has docked here, and they're going to have a very special ceremony for the people in the Anchorage area. They've got tours and other things that are going to be going on, and there is a personal friend of mine whose husband has donated moose antlers because the moose is the mascot for the USS Anchorage, and he's donated moose antlers, and they are going to be holding a special ceremony for that. So it's quite a special weekend up here in the far north. Donna Sebo here. Give me a buzz if you'd like to chat. Telephone lines are now open, 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. There's hardly anyone that doesn't have a cell phone today. The cell phone industry is just explosive. Technology keeps moving forward. However, there is a side of the cell phone industry that many of us are not aware of, and that is cell phone thefts. I was not aware that in San Francisco during the year 2012, nearly half of all the robberies involved cell phones. It was up 36% from 2011. In Washington, D.C., cell phones were taken in 42% of robberies. In New York, theft of iPhones and iPads in 2012 accounted for 14% of all crimes. Now, when you hear numbers like that, you wonder why. Well, there is a huge black market for electronics. And I just found out about this recently. And so I don't know that there's a heck of a lot that we can do at this time. You can have software called Find My iPhone, which will find a missing iPhone or remotely erase any data that's on it. However, what people are not aware of is that if you go in for this service, it doesn't work once the phone is turned off or disconnected from the Internet. Now, to locate an iPhone, an Apple customer can log into iCloud.com with a web browser and see a map of where it might be approximately, and then hit a button so that you can erase information that might be on that iPhone. But Google doesn't have any software in its Android operating system to locate a missing phone. And there's all kinds of various things that should be done, but that have not yet been done. And in the last 6 months in San Francisco, the resale market for stolen phones has been phenomenal. These are some of the numbers that have come up. A new iPhone stolen can get a thief $400 to $500 in cash. That is what it does. There is a police lieutenant, his name is Edward Santos Jr. He investigates robberies, and he said the starting price of a new iPhone 5 without a contract is $650. So the resale value is pretty high when you think about it. A half a dozen large-scale stolen electronics operations have been discovered in the last 6 months in San Francisco. When they found them, were able to break up these groups, they found thousands, not hundreds, thousands of stolen smartphones, as well as laptops, and they found them all over the Bay Area. They were in storage units. They were in houses. They found in one raid stolen electronics valued at $500,000. Now, this is what the thieves told the police. They said they sold their entire inventory every 2 weeks through flea markets that are in Oakland. And they also sold them shipping the electronics overseas. In their investigations, they have been able to find that recently cell phones that have been stolen, the cases that are turning up, a lot of these phones are ending up in Mexico, Vietnam, and China. Statistics that I think are really quite interesting. You need to be aware. Slowly but surely, they are going to be creating databases for phones that are stolen. But it is really difficult for the police. There's not a heck of a lot that they can do. So if you have any of these services, if your item is stolen from you, if you can erase the information, great. But be aware, stay mindful of what you have so that it doesn't end up going to another part of the world and you have to shell out another batch of dollars. Donna Sebo here, telephone number to call into if you would like to chat with me today is 888-627-6008. That's 888-627-6008. Well, this being springtime, there's so many people that are avid gardeners, and I have just found there are so many things regarding gardening. I am not a gardener myself. However, I really appreciate those people who are. But one of the things I have done is grow herbs in little pots because I really like to use them. I'm especially fond of peppermint. I just absolutely love that. But you know what? There are a lot of things that you can do, especially with items that you have around the house. And let's say you have some old teapots that maybe the lids have gotten broken, or maybe it's a little chipped and you wonder, gee whiz, that's so pretty, I still hate to throw it out. What can I do with it? Or you may have some items of ceramic nature that you can put outside. Now that the weather is getting nice, you can put little seeds in it and watch it become something that's quite attractive and beautiful to put out on your patio or on your deck or even in your own home. Well, basil is one of those items that's wonderful. Not only is it great, fresh basil in recipes, but it's got a compound called linalool. Now, this compound in it is very good for you health-wise. It's very good for keeping you mentally alert, and it is good for reducing fatigue. Who thought that basil, which is such a delicious delicious, wonderful herb to use would make such a difference. Well, it's not only lovely to use in food, but it's pretty to look at as well. And you can take a container, put that in, maybe put some parsley in, and just let it grow. I did not know that there are leaves that can be clipped in a special way with a specific kind of scissors that keeps them from being bruised. I was unaware that there are shears that have five blades to them, and they will chop your herbs without tearing the leaves, without causing damage to them, and you don't have to use a cutting board. You can just use these scissors, and they are just marvelous. I didn't know anything like this existed. Rosemary. This grows prolifically, and there is an old, old legend about rosemary that you can always tell who is the head of the household, whether it is a male or a female, because if it's female, the rosemary bush grows prolifically. Yes, I was told that by a good Italian friend, and she said it's just always been stated that this is what you see. And of course, her bush was just absolutely massive, and she had to cut it back constantly. But she used rosemary, fresh rosemary, in so many of her recipes. It's good for sharpening focus. If you are feeling sort of down and sluggish mentally, take some rosemary, rub it between the palms of your hands, and smell the delicious fragrance. And it's just invigorating. It's absolutely wonderful. You can have rosemary tea. It's good for memory. And it just really does make everything smell better. Have you ever considered using fresh herbs as a baster? This was a concept that I hadn't thought of, but you put your herbs together, tie them with a little bit of string, and you, when you're basting whatever meat you're cooking, that automatically, the herbs automatically mix in with the basting like if you're using butter. And it just gives a very, very delicate flavor to whatever you're basting. Basil and lavender, all you have to do if you want to grow it is fill small pots with some seed-starting potting soil. Put up 5 or 6 seeds. That's all you need, 5 or 6 seeds. Cover it with a thin layer of soil. Keep it moist, but don't soak it. Lavender is going to need a lot of light, but basil doesn't like direct sunlight until after it grows its second set of leaves. So you've got something here that's going to grow that's going to be wonderful, rosemary and sage. Hard to grow from seed, so you might want to start with some small cuttings. All you have to do is strip your leaves from the bottom of a stem. If you've got a friend that's growing rosemary like I do, take that stem, put it in water, roots will sprout, then put it in pots. They love indirect light and keep the soil moist. Parsley. Oh, this is a given. Who doesn't use parsley in most of their recipes? Get the seeds, soak them in warm water, but you put a few drops of dishwashing liquid in with them. That I did not know. Then you just soak them for an hour, rinse them well, soak them again in warm water to soften the outer shell, plant in a tall pot. Parsley puts down deep roots. They love morning light. Keep the soil moist. It'll grow prolifically. And thyme. You want to mix thyme seeds with sand to keep them from sowing too many roots at once. And you put a few seeds in a good-sized pot filled with your seed-starting soil. Press them lightly into the dirt. Now, thyme loves sunshine, and it likes barely moist soil. So there are some tips for you. You're going to find that when you have them growing in your home, there's this delicious fragrance that just fills your home. And remember, plants keep the air healthy where you live. They really serve you well. So they are just wonderful. You'll have the fresh herbs. And for those summer dishes, remember, it's time for barbecue pretty soon. Salmon, fish, oh, there's just so many wonderful things that you can fix outside. And having those fresh herbs available just creates a delectable magic with whatever you cook. Donna Sebo here. We're going to be taking a break. When we come back, I'll be sharing some interesting stories with you and also perhaps even a recipe that you can take with you and maybe practice with over the weekend. Donna Sebo here. We're taking a break. We'll be back in just a moment.
Donna Sebo publishes a popular, inspirational, and insightful newsletter filled with information about her upcoming guests, her travel schedule, seminar presentations, and upbeat articles to lighten up your life. You can subscribe to this free monthly newsletter by emailing her at donna@delphiinternational.com. That's donna@delphiinternational.com. You can also go to her website, www.delphiinternational.com, and review past publications. Keep in touch with Donna through this monthly publication. Again, her email address is donna@delphiinternational.com, and her website is www.delphiinternational.com.
As a counselor, Donna Sebo is available for private consultations by appointment. These can be done by telephone or in person. If you'd like to schedule an appointment with Donna, call 253-582-5604 or 800-872-8852. That's 253-582-5604.
Hi, this is Donna. Welcome back. I have got a great lineup of guests that are going to be with us next week, and it's going to be a guy week. I really say that tongue-in-cheek, but really, it is true. We're going to be talking with Robert Sharp, who has published a book called Joy Potential. And he has put together a wonderful, wonderful story about, well, lessons of life. He is also a talk show host and a man who has made metaphysics very much a center of his life, and that is part of this joy potential. We'll be calling Italy on Tuesday of next week, talking with a man, Ettore Grillo. Now, Ettore has a very interesting background, and he had sent me his publication a year ago, and because he travels quite a bit, we weren't able to bring him on air until now. But he has such a philosophical attitude about life that I think you really enjoy. Next Wednesday, we're going to be talking with William Wei about the basic practices of the healing Tao. The Chinese are renowned for their knowledge about the human body and how to bring oneself into balance. The Tao is one of those methodologies that they for centuries have employed, and we're going to find out why William decided he wanted to share some of the knowledge that he had experienced and grown with himself. Dr. Jay Cohen is going to be on the air with me on Thursday of next week. Prostate cancer breakthroughs. Men are experiencing, because they're living so much longer, prostate cancer. This attitude in general is that just about any man, regardless of how well he takes care of himself, is going to be vulnerable to this. Dr. Jay Cohen, though, is a physician who, when he was diagnosed with it, said there's got to be another way of dealing with this other than what we have been told. And so these are things, points of information, that if you have a loved one that potentially is going through this kind or could go through this kind of experience, or you know of someone who is, I think you'd really find this good information to know about. Healing Lyme disease co-infections. Stephen Buchner is a man who is addressing this because Lyme disease, where it for so many years was just heard of on the East Coast, actually is occurring in many parts of the United States. It's an insidious situation. It attacks the autoimmune system, and we're going to find out how we can work with it in a way that maybe the typical medical doctor might not even be aware of. So, information, dynamic lineup next week, and I hope that you will join me. I wanted to share a recipe with you for mochaccino blondies. What is this? And the reason I want to share it with you is because I have a sweet tooth. Do you? And periodically, I really like to have something that is going to taste absolutely decadent. And this is something that you can make yourself using a cake mix, or if you have a mix of your own, let's say for a white or a yellow cake. You could even make this with a chocolate cake if you wanted to. But this is very easy, and if you have time constraints, you don't have a lot of time to spend in the kitchen, this one, I think you're going to find, is going to gain if you're wanting to take it into work to share with your fellow workers, or you just want to make something special for your family. This will be a real joy to the taste buds. Now, this is what you're going to need. a teaspoon plus 1.5 tablespoons of instant coffee crystals. You need one package of your favorite yellow cake mix. Or like I said, if you have your own personal cake recipe, you can use that as well. You're going to need 1/2 cup plus 2 tablespoons of butter. This needs to be at room temperature. You're going to need an egg, room temperature again, 1 3/4 cups of bittersweet chocolate chips, 1 3-ounce package of cream cheese, again at room temperature, 2 tablespoons of milk, 3 cups of confectionery sugar, and then 1/4 teaspoon of ground cinnamon. Now, this is how easy this is to make. Your oven, you're going to need to preheat to 325 degrees. You are going to need 2 9-inch square baking pans, and you want to be sure that you have foil that is going to cover, to overhang the sides by 2 inches. Now, you want to spray those pans with some cooking spray so that your cake is not going to stick there. You want to stir 1 teaspoon of your coffee crystals into 1/3 cup of water until they dissolve. That just takes a few seconds. On medium speed, you either make your own special cake mix that you like, or just take your box mix, 1/2 cup of melted butter, egg, and coffee mixture until it's smooth. You stir in 1 cup of your chocolate chips, spread in the pan, and then you bake them for 40-45 minutes until the toothpicks come out. Now, actually, it's one pan. It all goes into one pan. You have the two, but you only need the one pan. So you put everything in the one pan. Now, this is where a microwave comes in handy. You're going to microwave, while the cake is baking, 3/4 cup chocolate chips on medium in 30-second intervals. You want to stir until they're melted and smooth. It takes maybe about a minute, minute and a half. You're going to let them cool slightly, and then in a small bowl, you're going to stir the remaining 2 tablespoons of coffee crystals into the milk until it's dissolved, and then you put that to the side. Then on medium speed, you're going to beat your cream cheese and remaining 2 tablespoons of butter until blended, and then you gradually beat in the sugar until it's combined well. Then you're going to add the melted chocolate, the cinnamon, and the reserved coffee mixture. You beat that until it's fluffy. You have the second pan, and that pan, you take that piece of foil, you line it. You're going to remove the cake, peel off the foil, and spread this frosting that you make over the top of it. It is going to be delicious. Let it set. Now, what you can do, if you're going to be taking this to a party, just leave the foil in the pan. You're going to have a good, stable carry unit. And then you can put the mixture right over top, let it cool, and then you can cover it with a second piece of foil, and then you can transport it to wherever you want it to go. Something I like to do when I'm making a packaged cake mix, I always like to use, instead of the water that typically is used in a cake mix, and this is just a Donna tip. I was taught this many years ago. I like to use 1/2 and 1/2, and I sometimes will add an extra egg because it gives a whole different texture. It's just absolutely marvelous. So I'll just share those little additional tips with you. Donna Sebo here, and if you have an appetite for something sweet, if you have a recipe that is absolutely a family favorite, I'd love to have you send it to me, because I think sharing recipes, sharing good food, ways to fix food so that it is tantalizingly delicious is always a very, very special thing. And of course, again, we're coming into spring. Food tastes often change, and we like to try different things. And remember, vegetables are coming out. There's so many wonderful recipes for delicious vegetables that I think you can really enjoy. This is Donna Sebo. We're going to be saying goodbye shortly. We are going to be broadcasting again from Anchorage, Alaska on Monday, and then I'll be back in my home office. We'll be talking about joy potential, a great way to start the week. Remember always, you're the master of your fate. You are the captain of your soul. This is Donna Sebo. May joy fill your life this weekend. Count your blessings and realize you are the master of your fate, the captain of your soul. God bless. Have a magnificent weekend. Talk to you on Monday. Bye for now.
You have been listening to The Donna Sebo Show. If you would like a copy of today's broadcast, send $10 to The Donna Sebo Show, P.O. Box 97272, Tacoma, Washington, 98497-0272. Be sure to put the date of the broadcast in your request. If you are not able to be a part of today's program, join Donna and her guests Monday through Friday, and she will be here to take your calls. Thank you for listening and being part of our program. Have a wonderful day.